You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs, per usual, always open for you. Smash the button so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Adam Chernoff, senior strategist at Covers. He uses round robins now to throw off the books in baseball. Very interesting strategy, and apparently it tends to work. Trusting specialized bettors. How important is that to Adam? Plus, his favorite NFL sleeper and a divisional long shot that almost made me fall out of my chair. Very good NFL draft. I would call it a success, although if you know me, I'm still upset about Trevor Penning going over 16.5. The handicap there was that he was going to New Orleans. That was the floor, if you will. There were rumors he could go 12, 14, 16. Position was 16.5, laid minus 135, felt good about it. Price got as high as minus 180. And then what happens? The Saints trade out of 16 and take Penning at 19. So that's one of those situations where you had the right handicap and the right idea, but the wrong result. And this is not an excuse, but I think it's important to understand why things lose sometimes. And Trevor Penning, by all accounts, was a very, very solid contender at one point to go top 10, top 12. The run on wide receivers sort of killed that play. And if you remember listening to our episode with Mike Helfgott earlier this week, he talked about him and his team were blind betting unders on a lot of receivers. And they went under on five different guys: London, Wilson, Olave, Burks, and Dotson. All five of those wide receivers end up going under the draft position number. And if you really think about it, add Jameson Williams to the fold. His position was 18.5, 19.5, closed 11.5, and I think he went 12. So if you would have gone under the starting draft position on those six wide receivers, that's 6-0 to the under. That's a tremendous angle by Helfgott, and that's why I think he's one of the best in the business. Still upset about Penning, but it was still a good draft. Stingley under 11.5, he goes third. Nakobe Dean over 30.5, he went 83rd. Jordan Davis under 14.5, he went 13 to the Eagles. Pickett to Carolina, had a feeling that was going to be a loser. That bet was one of the first ones I put in. I think it was the first one. And when the quarterbacks were rumored to slide, you knew that anything could happen, and Kenny Pickett goes to Pittsburgh. Think about the spaces, though, from Tuesday night. Will Brinson told you Trevon Walker was going number one. Minus 160, minus 170 at that point. That market the next day is minus 225, minus 230. The next day it's minus 450, and he was the clear-cut number one pick. The exactas that Brinson and Kostos and Molitor were discussing. The 1-2 punch of Walker and Hutchinson. And then the Quay Walker unders, all of those hit. That was a market at one point that was 40.5 on the draft position, got to 35.5, 32.5. I believe his market closed draft night 28.5 for the Georgia linebacker. He went 22 to the Packers. So all in all, happy about it. Still upset about Penning, but it is what it is. Made money, didn't lose. We also had another winner go into the left column when the Milwaukee Bucks bounced the Chicago Bulls. That was Wednesday night to win that series in five. Cash that Bucks -2.5 at plus 100. So the draft, by the time you listen to this, will be all but over. I didn't do anything round two or three. Don't give a damn about the rest of the rounds. So now we turn the page. NFL season, which will start before you know it in September. I hate how much I love Indianapolis. Tweeted about this on Friday. Win total over 9.5. One offshore book, 9.5 plus 100 to go over. Fox bet minus 105. Caesars minus 110. Points bet minus 15. Sugar House minus 20. MGM minus a quarter. DraftKings minus 130. Where are you going to go? What are you going to lay? I gave out Caesars because most of you don't have Fox bet. It's only in four states. 9.5 over -110. I think what that team has done in the offseason has catapulted them to at least a 10-win team. I think 11 or 12 is very realistic. Going from Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan is a big upgrade. And metrically, there's not a big advantage because Wentz actually wasn't that bad last year and Matt Ryan was atrocious. But Matt Ryan was on a fucking terrible football team. This team is built to win. And they were a quarterback away from being a playoff team last year. They go 9-8 with Carson Wentz at quarterback. Carson Wentz can't throw the ball 30 yards down the field. Matt Ryan can. One of the best offensive lines in football, with Quentin Nelson and Ryan Kelly anchoring that line. Jonathan Taylor is a workhorse at running back. Good receiver room. Doolin, Pittman, Campbell. They just took Alec Pierce in the second round. They've got a lot of skill, a lot of speed, very good line, a quarterback that can actually throw the ball down the field. And this is a defense that got better. They added Yannick Ngakoue with a trade from Las Vegas. And then you add Stephon Gilmore, the cornerback that used to be in New England, played in Carolina last year. Now he's their number one corner. Defensive line is very good. Kwity Paye, DeForest Buckner, Grover Stewart, and Ngakoue. Darius Leonard, linebacker. Very good secondary. I like their special teams. And I like Frank Reich a lot as a coach. I've been nervous the last couple of years because I thought Tennessee was better. The schedule wasn't that great, but this schedule is not that tough. They get the NFC East this year, which is not elite by any means. And the AFC West is tough on paper, but the Chiefs and the Chargers have to come to Indianapolis and play in the Dome. Colts will go at Denver, at Las Vegas. If they can go 2-2 in those games, which is very realistic, they're going to get there. And I look at the division, the AFC South as a whole, is going to be one of the worst divisions in football. There are some people that are high on Jacksonville, but that's a volatile football team. They could go 4-13. They could go 11-6. There's a lot of up and a lot of down there. There's a lot of volatility. I like Doug Peterson a lot more than I liked Urban Meyer, but it's still a second-year quarterback that was okay last year. If he makes a leap, yeah, the Jags can win 8-9 games. I know some people think that they're better than that, but it's a high ceiling and a low floor. Houston, win total, 4.5. I'm not even kidding. 4.5 is their win total right now. So that's a 3-4-win football team, probably. They suck. Tennessee is the enigma in the division. A.J. Brown gets shipped away, which is one of their best playmakers in the receiving room. And I don't know if you saw all these Titan players, night of the draft on Thursday, round one, tweeting like, yo, what are we doing here? Dysfunction is a real thing in the NFL. Ask anybody who played on those Mark Trestman Bears teams. And the Titans have been solid for a handful of years, but they never took that next step, and they never got to where they wanted to go. And eventually, the group just falls apart. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but odds are good that it does happen. Ryan Tannehill, ugh. You love Derrick Henry, but that defense has gotten progressively worse. The offense couldn't stay healthy, and now one of their best players has been traded, A.J. Brown, to Philadelphia. I think if you look at the lines in these games for Indianapolis, they're probably favored in 5 of the 6 games. Still a dog, probably a small dog at Tennessee. Titans -2, -2.5. I don't even think it's 3. It's sub-3. It's got to be. Because home field isn't worth 3 anymore. We know that. I would say, though, the Colts are favored in all but one of those AFC South games. And then you get Philly at home, the Commanders at home, Chiefs at home, Chargers at home. At Denver, at Las Vegas, at Dallas, at the Giants. Now, that could be 2-2, 1-3. But if they take care of business at home and take care of business inside that division, I love that team over 9.5. And I'm bullish on that. 10, in my opinion, is going to happen. 11, 12, probably. I don't like them to win the conference. I don't like them to win the Super Bowl. Just win 10 games. I love that. Have you heard the news? Massachusetts Senate passed a sports betting bill, 2844. Don't start celebrating yet. The way this works is that the House passed a bill last summer. The Senate passed a bill this week. But the two sides are divided on some serious issues. The biggest one is college sports. The House is for it. The Senate is against it. And some of the leaders in the House have said that this is a non-starter for them. If there's no college sports betting, the House is out. So there needs to be a meeting in the middle on that very, very key issue. And what I've been told from some of the people around the Senate is that a lot of the higher-ranking senators are located near big universities. And there's a lot of colleges in Massachusetts. Now, I don't know how much I'm going to bet on MIT or Harvard or Boston University, but Boston College has a lot of pull. There are some big universities here. And when you think about the way that Massachusetts works, it's very power-driven. So if these university presidents are getting in the ears of these senators and saying, hey, we don't want sports betting on our campuses, that may be a no-go. But here's where it gets difficult in Massachusetts. It's not just Massachusetts schools. They don't want you to bet on any college, which, as you know, enables the illegal market. I would understand. I wouldn't like it that we couldn't bet on Boston College against Georgia Tech. I would understand it because it happened in other states. Happened in New Jersey, happened in Illinois. But why can't we bet on Alabama against Georgia? Why can't we bet Michigan, Ohio State? Why can't I bet Texas, Oklahoma? That doesn't make any sense. Illegal bookies in Mass are just foaming at the mouth right now. They're like, all right, cool. You don't want to bet college? We'll take those. Offshore market. I mean, the offshore market and the black market in Massachusetts has been thriving for decades. The elephant in the room is the Boston College point shaving scandal. I think some people are still worried about that. But as you know, and anybody around a gaming board would tell you, regulated sports betting is better than the black market. If these books in Massachusetts can see the money coming in, they can raise the red flag, report it to Massachusetts Gaming, and then everything is even smoother. I would say not having college sports makes it more likely that there's shady things going on. So I'm hoping there's a compromise on college sports. Odds are good you will not be able to bet on a Massachusetts college event, whether it be a team or a game inside the Commonwealth. But I'm hoping that they can figure out a way to make the Senate side understand that you can bet on other colleges in other states. If the fear is Massachusetts, then just take Massachusetts off the table. Don't take the ability to bet California against Oregon or the Hawaii game, the bailout special. That has nothing to do with Massachusetts. These two sides have until July 31st to figure this out. The other big issues are the tax rates. They're higher in the Senate than they are in the House. And the advertising restrictions, which is really interesting. Because there's not a single state in the USA that doesn't allow ads during games. If you've watched sports in a state outside Massachusetts, you know the deal. During the game, third inning is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Tonight's question brought to you by DraftKings. This element sponsored by BetMGM. It's a way of the world now. But Massachusetts doesn't want ads during live games. Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox. Patriots are different, though. And this is, somebody brought this up to me. What happens when the Patriots are playing at home on CBS or playing at home on Monday Night Football and the national broadcast has a sportsbook partner? ESPN famously has a deal with Caesars. What happens if the Patriots are on ESPN? Is the state of Massachusetts going to tell ESPN, hey, you can't put Caesars on the feed during the game? I don't know. It's not in any other state. But those are the three big issues that the two sides are divided on. College sports, the tax rates, and the ad restrictions. What happens now is that we go to committee. The Senate and the House have to sit across the table and hammer out these issues, and then the best bill goes to the governor's desk. The deadline is July 31st. There's a lot of optimism. I think the Senate is very happy with their bill. The House is happy with their bill. But now you have to find that middle ground. And I'll be curious to see how it goes. Look, it's a win, a small win, if we get legalized sports betting. It's a massive win if we can bet on college. Like I said, at the end of the day, I don't think we're going to have the ability to bet on Massachusetts teams and games and events. I'm hoping that we can figure out the rest, because I don't think these people understand how big the college football and college basketball markets are. When you spread it out, there's college basketball every single day. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 360 teams? Take out, 10 or 15 in Massachusetts at the D1 level? I think it's about 10. That's still 350 teams. It's a lot of money. And I hope they are able to figure out a compromise. Are the Boston Celtics going to the NBA Finals? I wrote this up on Nesson the other day. I would have never thought that Boston would be favored to win the East, but this is where we are. And I spoke to a bettor who loves the path to the finals. Now, he's not saying go out and bet Boston at plus 150 because the odds were a lot higher. If you go back to the point of the season when the Celtics were 25-25, they were about 25-1 to win the East. And this bettor's like, oh, I'm kicking myself for not getting a piece, but I wasn't a believer. Look forward, though. Look ahead. And this is shaping up to be a very clean path for the Boston Celtics. They have home court against Milwaukee without Chris Middleton likely for the entire series. And then a couple odds makers in Vegas tell me that they are worried about the health for the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler has a nagging knee injury. Kyle Lowry missed the last two games of the Atlanta series with a hamstring injury. So even if they return, which is expected, lingering knee and hamstring injuries aren't exactly ideal for basketball players who are constantly cutting and exploding to the rim and driving and slashing. That's not good for Miami. So Boston is a $2 favorite or higher against Milwaukee. And then they'll probably be favored, even without home court, they'll probably be favored against Miami. If they beat the champs, they're going to be favored. That's just the way it works, perceptionally speaking. What are people going to bet? If Boston goes through Brooklyn and Milwaukee, Boston will be perceived to have the better path or the better road. Miami beats a Atlanta team and then beats the Sixers with Joel Embiid all hobbled and banged up again. More people will probably bet the Celtics. So Celtics will be favored in the next two rounds. Doesn't mean they're going to win. But you look at what is in front of Boston, they're probably going to go to the NBA Finals. If they're a $2 favorite at home or with home court and they're favored against Miami, you actually make more money if you roll it over than take the plus 150. If you do minus 210, roll that over, lay minus 120, you make more money rolling it over than you do parlaying it. But I think it's going to be Boston in the finals. It doesn't even mean they're the best team in the East. They're just playing together at the right time, and they're healthy. Health is everything in the playoffs in sports. And we could look up in the NBA Finals and see Boston Golden State or Boston Phoenix. I would not have thought that back in January or February. Two more quick things before we get to Adam Chernoff. I spoke with Alex Smith, interviewed him for Chicken Dinner. I'm going to probably put that out late Sunday or early Monday morning to get you ready for the NHL playoffs. If you've been following Alex, he's been all over the Minnesota Wild for months. He's got a ticket on them to win the Western Conference at 11-1. And as you'll hear in the coming days, he still thinks it's a good bet, 8-8-50, 9-1 to win the West. And I spoke to a couple odds makers in Vegas who are high on Minnesota as well. So when the prices started to come out and trickle out late Friday night and early Saturday morning, you saw a lot of stances taken on that series. For example, Caesars, Minnesota -130 against St. Louis. MGM -140. FanDuel -148. DraftKings -150. And then Circa. Jeff Davis very high on Minnesota, -180. So a 50-cent difference between Caesars and Circa, -130 to -180. If you have a Caesars shop, go lay it, -130. MGM -140, great. You could even make the argument that Minnesota could be a $2 favorite. Now, bookmakers aren't going to open $2 because if there are 130s and 140s in the market, there's no point. What happens, though, when the Wild win game one? That series price goes from as low as -130 or as high as -180 to -270 or something like that. So I am more than okay with you laying -130, -140. Tweeted that out at Chicken X Dinner. And as Alex will tell you on Chicken Dinner, he likes Minnesota to make a run. Last thing, spaces on Tuesday night. This happens every year. Most of you aren't really following horse racing. But when you get to Friday, Saturday before the Kentucky Derby, you're going to make a bet. And you go, I like this horse, or I like that horse, or what a great name, or ooh, I like the 7 because it's a 7. Let's get you ready for the Kentucky Derby. The Tuesday night spaces with Uncle Kirk, Kirk Rockwell, Colin Sheehan, and Paul Zilm from Circa. They're all going to join me Tuesday, May 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern. We will discuss horse handicapping, reading the daily form, these horses that have been on the rise, and those are three people that are extremely good at talking and handicapping the horses. You got two handicappers, a bookmaker who used to work at Churchill Downs, and I will steer the boat. That simple. So if you're looking for some more expertise on the Kentucky Derby and on horse handicapping in general, you may want to check out that spaces on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock. It'll be live at 8 and then recorded so you can listen or consume as you please. But I would implore you, before you make a renegade, rogue, gunslinger, Kentucky Derby trifecta or whatever, listen to what these three experts have to say and then go from there. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, so good to chop it up with Adam Chernoff, senior strategist for covers at Adam Chernoff, C-H-E-R-N-O-F-F. My first question is, why do you hate baseball?
It's tough every day. I used to love it, but now at the age I am, getting old, slowing down, I can't do it every single day with football going every day. It would never end. It's too much.
The worst part about baseball is that I will frequently bet a dog on a Tuesday. Say I take the Detroit Tigers at +150 and they lose on Tuesday. I won't back them on Wednesday and they'll cash at +160. And it drives me insane.
Has to happen every single day to people falling in that same trap. Like there's so many things that you can look at with baseball. You can get just drowned in data and be completely upside down for weeks throughout the summer. And it wrecks the summer.
It wrecks the summer might be the title of the show, honestly. It is such
suitable.
A thrill ride, and I'm sure you've heard the old quote, you're friends with Mitch and Pauly over at VSiN. Bogdanovich said, the famous Vegas bookmaker, he said, if you want to bet baseball every day, you need a bottle of whiskey and a revolver.
That's one of the best betting quotes ever. That'll stand the test of time as long as we live.
But you're still firing baseball, though. I know you have contacts that are good at it. You're firing, like, round robins and stuff. You still, like, you scratch that itch every once in a while, right?
Okay, so we're doing work with Derek Carty, who's, I think, probably held in the highest regard when it comes to MLB props. And so it's just, I don't know. Like, I haven't genuinely watched baseball for probably 6 or 7 years now and haven't bet it seriously since either. But he's throwing out, like, he has a prop sheet that he sends to us every morning. And, like, there's like 40 bets every single day.
Come on.
And I'm like, look, I can't be betting 40 baseball props a day for like 6 months every day. Like I will be dead by the time we get to September. But what we are doing is, and it's becoming a kind of a popular angle that people are now talking about it, but with these props at times having much lower limits, especially earlier in the day, a way that you can kind of get around that, if you know the stuff like what he's giving out is as plus EV as it is, if you know everything's good, your round robins actually aren't the worst way to go about it, because you'll get around the limits and obviously you can still maximize a lot of the value that's being presented. So we're playing a lot of Yankees, which are four combos of twos, three combos of, or four or six combos of twos, four combos of threes, and a four. So it's 11 bets in total off of chunks of four props that he sends over. And so it's 11 times whatever the stake amount you put in. And so it's, we're playing them blind. Like I can't follow it, but we're doing that.
It's the Bat X release show on Covers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with Chernoff and Cardi. I think that's a really interesting point by you about getting around the limits, because you're one of the sharpest cats I know. And I know you can't get down what you want to get down in most of the things you bet. I imagine somebody in a risk room somewhere, when they see the account pop in a bunch of round robins, they just go, oh, all right, let them go.
That's exactly it. And that's something that I've learned from people much smarter than I am. And that's been kind of the move within regulated books. So it's relatively new for me. I've really been doing it with baseball. I don't have the same issues. Obviously, betting player strikeout props at 11 a.m. Eastern on a weekday, don't have the same problems there that I would with what I do, which is the NFL. So I've just kind of been taking what I've learned from those other folks and applying it to baseball. And like you said, it just gets treated a lot differently from how some of these regulated books are looking at the bets coming in.
It's very important to hear somebody like you say that you don't know something about X or Y or Z, but you also are able to look to other people or other sources. Because I said this on my Spaces on Tuesday. I said the handicapper or the bettor that says they win in everything is a fucking liar. It's impossible. You can't be good at Major League Baseball, college football, NHL, soccer, golf. It's impossible.
No chance. Yep.
But if you find a person that is good at different things, that studies hockey and golf and tennis the way that Adam Chernoff studies the NFL, then you build a network of very strong sources. And I was telling you before we started here, I have a buddy who lives in Vegas, doesn't get down a lot because they limit him, but he spreads around the wealth in Nevada, probably bets about 5 or 10 dimes a game, mostly on WNBA totals. I don't know 8 players in the league. Hell, I don't know 4 players in the league. But when he sends me a WNBA bet, you bet your ass I'm going to bet it.
Yeah, networking's enormous. And I didn't realize the value in it, and I very much regret it sort of growing up like 8, 10, 12 years ago when I was getting started. But nowadays have really come to notice the value in that. And I would say that over the last year and a half to 2 years, I've really been able to expand into other things. And so what accounts I had that were usually very, very quiet between May and August are now having a little bit more going in. But it's absolutely, you nailed it on the head. If you can find, doesn't have to be every single sport, but if you can find some other guys to sort of fill in weaknesses that you might have or just blind spots you don't know about, you can learn a lot and you can win a lot as well.
I remember being an envelope guy back in the day in my first couple years of college, and we used to look at the back ends of some of these accounts, and you would find people that would win at certain things. And you know the back end, you could spread it out and see pretty much everything if you want to, if you have an advanced back end. And there would be players that would be very good at, let's just say it's the NBA, and they would be up $2,000 in the NBA only, but they would be down $3,000 in everything else. And I always wondered about the psychology of that. Like, if you're a very good NBA bettor and you just stick to that, I'm telling you, this guy would have killed us. He would have won all the time. But he was so stubborn, he couldn't get out of his own way because he was too busy firing baseball parlays or, you know, hockey round robins or whatever. He only hurt himself because he was not disciplined. And I think, you know, there are a lot of important factors to win in this racket. Discipline is, I think it's number one, two, and three. But it always amazed me, Adam, that people would not just do what they were good at. They would test the waters of other things. And that's usually why they lost.
The amount of accounts when I was on the bookmaking side that would have a positive or break-even balance on the U.S. sports you clearly knew they were watching was a pretty decent number, but it was even a greater number of those accounts that then went in the red because of Bundesliga and Premier League and anything that you like, you could clearly associate it to just being on the chase after whatever happened the night before where it didn't go their way. I think the number of people that are in that situation is much greater than we tend to think about, because there's the element of the chase is always something that's incredibly intriguing to a lot of folks. So I'm sure people listening are in the same spot as well, because I've definitely been there too.
I've been there myself. I'm not trying to shout from the rooftops about how you're a degenerate or anything, but I'm saying, like, I think it's important. And a lot of people, we know, they're doing this for fun. They're betting $25-$50 a game. But if you're serious about trying to win, you have to learn how to lose. You have to understand discipline. There are so many things that go into the stew before the stew's ready after 8 hours of cooking or whatever. I can't even imagine some of the stories you have. I mean, you were in Trinidad and Tobago. You were talking about the whiteboards last time we had you on and all the things you learned there. But you had to just look at some accounts some days and be like, oh, my God, this guy's got a problem.
Oh, and you knew it, too, when you would see it come in on the ticker. But a lot of it was always associated to bigger parlays. But you would just see it escalate night after night after night. If it was early in the week and there were some games that didn't go that way, and you would just see it compound as you got into Friday, Saturday, Sunday, guys being on the chase. Like, it was – it gets ugly for a lot of folks. And I think what you said is important, where if you're trying to be profitable or you're just trying to break even, you can actually get a lot ahead by just sort of stopping those leaks that you have in other sports and just living to go another day when things don't go right. But yeah, I've seen some ugly ones for sure behind the scenes.
Please give me an example. I don't need a name. I would never ask for a name, but give me an idea. Are we talking like a guy's betting a dime a game and then all of a sudden he bets a 10 dime bet? Like how crazy are we talking as far as the exponential rise?
So the one that always stands out in my mind, and this is when I was with the site in the Bahamas for 5+ years, you could see names and details of accounts, and like, this guy was clearly on vacation or whatever. Like the name just looked like he wasn't from the Bahamas and was probably visiting from the States. And he would deposit routinely anytime the account was active, kind of 1,000, 2,000. And there was one week, like early NFL season, that you like, the numbers that were coming in on the screen were pretty standard throughout the week. And they kept getting bigger and bigger, and it kept coming from his account. But it was also associated to credit card cash advances the cashier within one of the locations.
Oh, no.
And it was the $1,000 cash advance, the $2,000 cash advance, the $4,000 cash advance, the $8,000, $16,000. It got up to $32,000 plus everything below.
Come on.
And you knew that he was sitting there day after day just getting buried on the chase. And then he didn't – like, it didn't ultimately make it to the weekend. So he hit the limit midweek.
Oh.
And that was like – you never saw that account come through again. And so, like, I wasn't there to physically see it, but I've been in other situations where I've seen it happen. And it's the – you just – it's like the person is in – like almost like a different state of mind. That's not them in real life. They're just in like this gambling mode, so to speak. and they're just disconnected, and it's just like hopelessly handing over money. It's it happens so often, but it's grim. But that one, because I know that he wasn't the usual sort of bigger betting players that we had, which were usually associated to pretty lucrative businesses elsewhere. But this was just a guy that came down and just got cleaned out and never heard from him again.
Yikes. Please avoid that, disclaimer. I got to ask you about, you know, the Canadian side of things. How have you sort of assessed the situation now that you can bet? There's a lot of outs in Canada. Things were a lot different, you know, 6 months to a year ago. How do you think the marketplace is right now in Canada?
It's the rocky start has been negated. There were a lot of verification issues. There were a lot of geolocation issues. A lot of new things for bettors and the books that entered the market, as well as those that were existing in the gray market and have now gone legal. That's kind of all been sorted. But the big thing that stands out to me was for the last basically almost 4 years now, since things, I believe it was May 15th was when New Jersey went legal in 2018. So it's almost been 4 years where I've been hearing about a lot of people that I bet with and speak with on a daily basis talk about how many mistakes there are from a pricing perspective at these regulated books. And I was never really exposed to it because even when I've been in the States, I don't have a social insurance number. So I've never been able to get like live accounts at the big regulated books within the US. And I'm blown away by just how many mistakes there actually are at some of these books, even after that many years. And like, I've sent some embarrassing messages to people that I know to be like, look, like, is this too good to be true? Or am I all of a sudden like incapable of doing basic math? Like, what's happening here? Because like, I'm finding differences in props and like, even like team totals, like not crazy obscure markets of 6 to 10% on 5 to 6 games a night with like it's insane how crazy some of these books operate by just whether they're slow moving, they don't know any different. The odds providers are have a disconnect. I don't know what it is, but it's shocking to me how there's these massive companies and they're just missing really basic things on the sports betting side. I don't know what's going on, but it's blowing me away. So that's like the biggest thing that stood out to me here in the first 2.5 weeks now.
Can you at least get down something decent?
I haven't had issues yet. And I think it's an interesting discussion that obviously comes up a lot. And I know, I think in the States, it's accelerated. In Canada, what I've at least heard from other states that have gone live is that the risk limits that they have on certain markets weren't set up immediately off the start. And that was coming from different states that have opened recently. And people were saying that it takes a week or two and then they show up. I don't know if that's the case in Canada. I haven't had major issues yet. But what I have found in what I think is happening now in just the space in general is that a lot of bettors are confusing being limited as a risk decision from the trading team at the sportsbook saying, you are a sharp player, this is a sharp account, we are intentionally limiting you on anything you try to bet across the board. I think there's that happening, but then there's also the case of people going in at 9:30 in the morning and trying to bet $500 on a total basis prop and being rejected and told that they're only able to bet $50, which is them assuming it's the former, but really it's just them betting too much for the betting limits that are set. And because those betting limits are not made transparent, I think this never-ending discussion of people saying they're limited at sportsbooks is really just a lot of people trying to bet more than the book is willing to take as a liability. Now, I'm not saying that either is a good thing, but I think that people misjudging betting limits for themselves being limited is happening much more than it's just people getting circled and shut down by some of these books. And so in Canada, neither has really got out of control yet, but I think that the the betting limit side of it is going to start happening very soon.
Yep.
And then we'll see people ultimately start to get limited themselves, but it's just not there yet for whatever reason, but it's kind of been common with some state launches as well.
And not every limit is created equal. I know some people live in Colorado. They love the landscape in Colorado because they could have like 20 legal outs in Colorado and spray whatever you want. But there are some books, and you don't have to name names, but there are some books for like an NBA MVP market. Some of these books that claim to be taking big bets, they have a payout limit with that market. So it doesn't even matter who the player is. You could bet the favorite 5-1 or the long shot at 100-1. The max the book will pay out is 1,000. So they sort of limit the payout. They're not limiting the player. They're just limiting. They're going to say from the get-go, look, the most you can win on this market is 1,000. And I guess, look, if you're upfront about it, that's fine. But at the other side of that turn, you can't be bragging about taking big bets and then limit an MVP market to a $1,000 payout.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'm completely with you. And I think the big thing here, which, to be honest, like, I can't get a good gauge on every bettor in America, like what percentage have come into this issue. I feel like on Twitter, we think it's higher. In reality, it's probably much lower. But what I do know for sure, and is something that I have taken to the regulators in Ontario, being in the spot I am with Covers, a Canadian company that's been around for 25 years. We have some connections. To me, the big thing that needs to happen is for the books to just post whatever that limit is. If it's 1,000 on the MVP market, I don't think many bettors are going to be upset if they know that it's 1,000 before they hit submit on the bet, because that's ultimately the sportsbook decision. And we can say, like, well, that's not very fair. Like, you guys should be taking more. It's a big company. Like, that can all be justified using data. But I think the problem right now, and what's leading to so many negative experiences and just having pretty much everyone in general not have a very good thing to say about any sportsbook, is you don't know what that limit is until after you try to place the bet. And this is excluding the places that will give you the spooling circle and then move the odds and reject your bet. That's a different subject. That's horrible. But I think we need to get to a point where it's a regulation that you have to say what the limit is, either what you can risk or either what the liability cap on the win is up front. So at least you know what you're getting into before you click submit, and then you get frustrated and annoyed because what you wanted to do was rejected. I think that's where the majority of the negative experiences are coming from. And it's such an easy thing to fix.
I love having these big picture conversations with you about strategy and industry. We could go for hours if we wanted to, but I'm going to let you slide on the following question, because people are like, we love Chernoff, but we need some info. So let me ask you this. Is there a team in the NFL that you know by August or September you will either have a big bet on the win total over, on them to win a division, a conference, a Super Bowl? Is there a team that you've circled of the 32 that you are buying for this coming fall?
Give me the Jags at 7-1 to win the South.
Really?
So I like what Doug Peterson has done taking over free agency. He did a very similar thing his Super Bowl year in Philadelphia, where he just went crazy in free agency and just stacked the roster with guys he likes. I don't know what's ultimately going to happen in the draft. Maybe they end up moving out of the top spot, getting someone else, or they're either adding a pretty decent defensive piece either way. But just that entire division, I think, is in a spot where you're getting a lot of steps back across the board. I'm not even going to count Houston in the picture, but the Titans overachieved as much as anyone a year ago. Now they're in a spot where Brown might ultimately be leaving the team. There's questions about Tannehill. He'll be there, but are they going to stick with him longer term? Is there going to be someone taken in the draft that's going to cause competition. I think the Titans take a step back. Obviously, the Colts, a lot of moving parts there, putting a lot of question marks around that team too. And you just have the Jags who, like, it was like the opposite of what Tennessee did a season ago, where you have Urban Meyer in that whole situation. It really could not have been worse for Jacksonville. And so I think it's setting them into this season just incredibly underpriced within a division that's pretty flat, in my opinion, from top to bottom. So to me, I look at it, it's a pretty big number for just how soft that division ultimately is. So definitely have some intrigue with the Jags.
I love that you skip right over the win total. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to go over. I'm going to take them to win the division at 7-1. The win total 6 at DraftKings, but that's only one shop. I'm sure we're going to get a lot more numbers after the draft, after we get the schedule. So I know you like Jags over 6, but 7-1, I almost fell out of my chair there, pal.
Well, I've stopped betting a lot of like win totals in general, just because I find that I'm able to allocate the money that I would have tied up in win totals at minus 110, minus 120 better during the season. So I don't play a ton of preseason futures, but if I'm going to play it, it'll tend to be on something like this, where if that's tied up and I think it's really good, there's a little more coming back from it relative to what I'm going to get elsewhere. So I wouldn't say no to that win total, but I'm probably not going to lock up some money on that relative to what I can get back from the division total. So I just like that a little better.
That's Adam Chernoff. Great follow on Twitter at Adam Chernoff. He works with Covers, and you got to check out the show with his buddy Derek Carty, the Bat X Release Show on Covers. They do it 3 times a week. My man absolutely crushed it in the NFL last season. I know you're studying. I know you'll be ready, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon before football season, man. Thanks for making the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for chatting.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. 249, 253, and 8, up 10.3 units. Had a really good end of the week. Bucks series -2.5. And then in the draft, 3-2. Stingley, Dean, and Davis, the winners. Penning and Pickett, the losers. 2 in the hopper as well. Put these out at Chicken X Dinner. Indianapolis Colts over 9.5 wins, -110. And the Minnesota Wild to advance against the St. Louis Blues at -130. Coming up on the show, Alex Smith gets us ready to bet the NHL playoffs. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.